Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is the Coast to Coast Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Fitch. And today we're going to dip into some controversial subjects.
We are proud to have 2016 Olympian and the youngest.
This is not one of those shows where I'm happy and peppy and all that good stuff. This is not that kind of deal. This is a show where we're going to dip into some controversy. And we're going to talk about Colin Kaepernick. We're going to talk about the murder of Nikia Aldridge. And I really want to get into that. And I want to get into Colin Kaepernick and my opinion on Colin Kaepernick and his situation. First of all, he did not stand up for the national anthem against the Green Bay Packers. He said he's never going to stand up. And he gave his reasons why. I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. That's what he told the NFL Network. This is my issue with Colin Kaepernick. You should, first things first, if you have a problem with the oppression of people, I'm a man of color, we have to take care of our own. There's murders going on in Chicago, in Detroit, in Newark, in St. Louis, in D.C., in Compton, all over. What you should have said, if you're that mad, because a lot of people have protests. Protests are part of the country. And you're not that, and I'll get to his talent in a minute. But you should have protested all the bad situations and all the murders and how we have to solve the black-on-black crime first. Let's take care of our own house first. Then we're going to deal with other issues where we might be racially discriminated. Once we clean our house up first, we're going to go outside and then we'll deal with that. And then you're going to be taken seriously. Now, this is the problem with Colin Kaepernick. He stinks. The media doesn't want to say that. They want to sugarcoat it. He stinks. He was good. He led the 49ers to the Super Bowl, and nobody understood how to solve him when he was in that read option. They've solved him. He never developed a plan B. He never went through his progressions. He's a one read. If he can't see that read and that guy's not open, he takes off running, and teams are squatting on that, and that's why he's second string to Blaine Gabbert, who's not that good either. The 49ers have a mess. The 49ers are going to cut him because the PR hit they're going to take is going to be worse and worse and worse, and the more he sits out and the angrier the fans get and the angrier the sponsors get, it's a problem. It's one thing if it's Brady or Drew Brees or Roethlisberger or a lot of the players who have good standing with their team and they make a protest. Yeah, the people are going to be mad and there's going to be a PR hit, but the team's going to be like, we're not happy, but we respect his wishes. Not Colin Kaepernick, because he stinks. I do not sugarcoat when I do a radio show. If the guy's good, I'm going to say he's good. If he's excellent, I'm going to say he's excellent. I say he has a good character, I'm going to say he has a good character. I'm not challenging his character, but he stinks, and this is not the way to do it unless he wants to get cut and doesn't want to play anymore. And I hope he saves his money because the 49ers are going to cut him, and he's radioactive right now. So no team is going to take him because he's not any good. So you're not any good. You're making this controversial statement, which your former teammate is upset with him. And there's different players that agree with him because they believe that there's injustices. I'm not saying there's not injustices, but there's a different way to approach it. First and foremost, once your behind gets cut, you need to take your behind directly to Chicago to help the Dwayne Wade situation where his cousin got murdered, an assisted murder. And I'm sick and tired of seeing these things happen. Where are the athletes to comment on Nikia getting murdered, his cousin? It's ridiculous. And where are the players? I don't understand. You have all this crime in Chicago, and there's no outrage, you know, that Nikia Aldridge got murdered. It makes no sense. Now, ESPN, which I had issues with, did a roundtable with Jamel Hill, which was pretty good. They talked about solving the crime. And Isaiah Thomas did say something good, that not everybody in bad communities are bad. There's good people. And they are, because I read the YouTube comments that are nasty and racist. I don't like that, because there's a lot of good people in my race, and one of them name is Colton Brown, who I'm going to do the re-interview. He's an Olympian. He fought in judo in the Olympic competition. He did well. I'm going to talk with him later on. I'm going to show you that there are people of color who live in the spirit of excellence, but there's a lot of crime out there too. And that bothers me, you know. And this is, I actually have the perfect guest on. He's Al Yellen, who covers the Chicago Cubs, so he's in the community. So I'm going to talk to him about the Cubs first, and then we're going to get to that question about the community and all the problems of violence. Hello, Al.
Good morning.
Al Yellen. Hey, how are you doing? I know you cover the Chicago Cubs. I am a paranoid Chicago Cubs fan, so I want to ask for your forgiveness to begin this interview, because some of these questions are somewhat out of paranoia, even though the Cubs have the best record in the major leagues. I want to get with some of the issues I have. First, I want to talk about the Dodgers series, which just ticked me off. I thought that at that play at second base, I thought he was out. What do you think about that?
You mean on the play at second base? Well, you know, it was pretty close, but when you're looking at replay review, which they did, and Joe Maddon did challenge that play, they got to have really good evidence to overturn, and I don't think they had good enough evidence. So, but you know, I mean, despite the fact that Javier Baez made the wrong throw to the wrong base and it was the wrong play to make, they didn't score any runs. So you can't win if you don't score any runs. So, you know, the offense was a bit of a problem too yesterday.
There's no problem with Hamill and Madden, right? Because he was furious when he got took out of the game Saturday.
This is happening. You know, this happened a couple times last year too, when Hamill took or Madden took Hamill out early, and you know, the two of them supposedly talked after the game, worked it out. Neither one of them wanted to talk any more about it. You know, Jason Hamill's a competitor, just like everybody on this team. He wants to stay in, help his team. But you know, Joe Madden's going to do what's best for the team, and I think that everybody's pretty much bought into this. So. You know, I think it's kind of a nothing thing. I think they just have to move on, and Hamill's got to pitch better next time.
Yeah, now here are my concerns. There's things I really like about this team, and here are my concerns. They have a losing record versus the Cardinals, the Giants, and the Dodgers. They have beat up on the Nationals. I want to get to the most mentally toughest teams first, and then we're going to go to the mentally weaker playoff teams. The mentally toughest teams, the team I'm really scared of is the Cardinals. Because of the rivalry, and the Cubs beat them last year. When you see the Cardinals, what are the problems, and how would the Cubs have to? What would the Cubs have to do to beat the Cardinals? Because you know they're a pain in the neck, and they're always in the playoffs.
Well, you know, first of all, the Cubs got swept by the Cardinals in June when they were at Wrigley, in a time when you know the Cubs didn't have Dexter Fowler in the lineup, and that's a big deal. When Dexter's out, you know, they don't have much offense, and also the pitching was struggling. But apart from that series, the Cubs have played the Cardinals pretty well this year. They won 4 out of 6 in St. Louis. So, you know, I'm not that worried about the Cardinals. They're always kind of there lurking. There's a chance they might not even make the playoffs. There's other teams fighting for those wild card spots. So, you know, it'll be a pretty good test when the Cubs go to St. Louis in a couple of weeks to see how they're doing against them. You know, you talk about the Dodgers. The Cubs actually still do have a winning record against the Dodgers. They won the season series 4-3. So
okay, you're correct. Yes, that's right.
And they played. You know, they played pretty tough. They lost 2 tough 1-run games. They had a great comeback on Friday. So, you know, the Dodgers will be tougher if they get Clayton Kershaw back. And we still don't know about that. But you know, if you've got to face Clayton Kershaw in a playoff series, you know that's going to be tougher. The Giants will see at Wrigley this weekend.
The Giants were the next team.
The Giants,
even though they're struggling, you know their MO in the playoffs.
Right. I mean, the Cubs lost 2 out of 3 in San Francisco in May. They lost a tough 1-0 game to Madison Bumgarner, who's really good. You know, you don't want to face him in the playoffs either. But, you know, this weekend will be a good test. They got 4 games against the Giants at Wrigley. That'll be a good test to see how they match up against them.
Now, we talked about the Dodgers. The Dodgers don't have the best history recently in the playoffs. They've come up short against the Cardinals and the Phillies the last couple, 10 years. But the only thing that worries, and maybe I'm paranoid, these teams that don't show up really good in the playoffs, sometimes they do. And maybe the Cubs are due. You know, but do you think they did match up with the Dodgers, but you worry that, you know, the Dodgers always screw up in these situations, and one of these years they might get it right.
Well, I mean, you know, the Cubs have had a tough time in the postseason too.
Over the last few years.
So, you know, you could say that about any team. This Cubs team is a really good team. You don't have to, you know, you can be worried because of the issues with the bullpen. Those issues should be settled when Hector Rondon and Pedro Strop come back. So I think, you know, in general, I think you're worrying a little too much. The Cubs are just as good,
See, that,
if not better, than any of these
you.
Teams. Right. I mean, the Cubs
thank
are
you,
just as good.
Thank you so
if
much.
Not, right. And I hope I made you feel better with all this.
Unfortunately, not only are you your journalist, today on this show, you're kind of going to be a little bit of a therapist. So I really appreciate this.
Oh, sure. And that's my pleasure.
Now, one more team we haven't talked about, and they have, the last 5 years they've been in the playoffs, they've not really showed up, or they've choked 3-1 leads. That's the Washington Nationals. And what concerns me is if Strasburg is healthy, and then you have the other pitchers on the pitching staff. And then me and you know Daniel Murphy. So he kind of puts
right.
a good guy to me.
Right.
But what kind of matchup would that be? Because the couple
well,
of
you
handles,
know, Murphy,
the Nationals pretty good.
I mean, Murphy's having a really good year. I didn't think he would do that after, you know, I figured that playoff run last year was a miracle. But he's doing that again this year. He's an MVP candidate, although I'm pretty sure Chris Bryant will win. You know, Murphy will finish high in the voting for MVP, so that's a good team. I'd actually worry more about Max Scherzer in the playoffs than Strasburg. Scherzer's been great. He's really tough on the Cubs. But you know what the wild card is for the Nationals in the playoffs is Dusty Baker. Dusty doesn't seem to understand that playoff games have to be managed differently than regular season games. We saw that when he managed the Cubs in the playoffs. We saw that when he managed the Reds in the playoffs a few years ago.
Yes,
so
yes, I did.
I won't expect it, but you know, there's going to come up a situation if the Nationals are in the playoffs, and Dusty's going to have to make a decision, and he's almost definitely going to make the wrong decision. So, Cubs won 5 out of 7 from the Nationals this year. They swept them at Wrigley. If they can beat Max Scherzer, they can beat the Nationals.
Okay, now let's talk about the positives. Who's your MVP if you had to pick between Rizzo and Bryant?
It's got to be Bryant. I mean, you know, Rizzo is the team leader. He's the emotional leader of the team. He's the, you know, he and Travis Wood are the only guys left from 2012, so he's been there just about longer than anybody else. But in terms of performance, you know, look what Chris Bryant's done over the last couple of weeks. He's definitely the league MVP.
Now, I love what Zobrist is doing. But, you know, Hayward is picking up, and he's starting to play better because people are like, oh, this is a waste of money. He's coming from the Cardinals. But I'm starting to see good things out of Hayward, and that's going to make the lineup more complete.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that's over the last 2 weeks, ever since Joe Maddon benched him for that series in Colorado, he started to hit better. I mean, he hit a rocket yesterday that Adrian Gonzalez made a great catch on. Otherwise, that would have scored a couple of runs. So I like what I've seen out of Hayward. Obviously, his defense is great, and that brings value to the team even when he's not hitting. If you combine that and he starts hitting, I mean, you've got a great boost to the offense for the last 2 months of the season and the postseason.
Now, I want to ask, can the Cubs, are they mentally, I know talent-wise, are they mentally ready to get to the World Series and win it? Say, you saw what the Royals did. Can they come back? I don't want to, this is my paranoia take. If they're down 3-2 and things don't go perfect and they're in a dogfight, do you believe this team can have the resolve to make a comeback, maybe like the Royals did against the Astros, down and show their toughness and then have the resolve to finally break through? Is this squad built like that?
One of the things that's really good about this team is that they have that playoff experience from last year. All these guys have been through it. They lost to the Mets, so they understand, you know, they understand what it's like to win a series because they beat the Cardinals. Then they understand what it's like to lose a series against the Mets. That's really good playoff experience. You mentioned Ben Zobrist. He was on the Royals World Series winning team last year, so he brings that to the ball club. You got got John Lester and John Lackey who have played on World Series winners, and you have Joe Maddon who is always thinking one step ahead of the guy in the other dugout. So
always.
The answer to your question is yes, they definitely have what it takes to win a playoff series if they're down and their so-called backs are against the wall. I think they do have that.
You know, I really think the city could really use
the Cubs winning the World Series with all the bad things that are the bad publicity you got with the violence and everything. What are the Chicago Cubs doing charity-wise to kind of lend a hand to help with all the issues and the bad publicity and the violence that goes on in Chicago and maybe in the South Side, not necessarily the North Side? Have the Cubs done anything to reach out to the community?
Well, I don't know whether they've specifically done anything in terms of what, you know, the bad things that you hear about the city right now. But, you know, any professional athlete will be concerned about the city that, that he plays in. Some of these guys do live here year-round. So I know they do. A lot of these guys have charitable foundations where they try and raise money for good causes. So, you know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, anybody, any resident of the city is going to be concerned about what's going on. And the Cubs, you know, Cubs winning can just do good things to make the city feel better about itself.
Definitely. Thanks a lot. Listen, I have to have you back on. Even if your job is to just calm me down and tell me everything's going to be all right. You did a terrific job.
It's going to be all right.
Thank you.
And thanks for having me anytime.
Thank you very much. That was Alia Mellon. He writes for SB Nation for the Chicago Cubs. He was terrific. Now I want to talk about something positive. I had a chance to interview Colton Brown, who fought in the Olympics. He fought in the judo, and he won the first round match and then lost the second round match. I thought the guy ran like a chicken. I expressed that opinion last week. He is going to win. He's 24. He's the youngest. He was the youngest to compete in the Olympics. And I just absolutely love the fact that this guy is a positive kid. He's a positive role model in New Jersey and in San Jose where he lives. And I want to give you guys a chance to listen to him in this interview.
And judo Colton Brown. What's going on, Colton? Listen, how does it feel to be an Olympian?
Feels amazing. It's been my dream since I was 12 years old, stepped on a judo mat, so this is a great feeling. Can't describe it in words.
But you're number one as far as your age group at 24, under 25 in the world.
Yep.
How does that feel?
Feels
another
amazing feeling because, you know, I fought so long to be number one, and it finally happened, and now, hey, I'm headed to Rio on Sunday.
You have an unusual story because of the fact that you were playing football,
yep,
and then all of a sudden, tell the audience what happened.
I was playing Pop Warner football when I was 9 years old, got hit on a wrong tackle, broke my leg, ended up injured,
mm-hmm,
and I didn't do anything. I didn't want to do any sports for 3 years, so I was bedridden, and my dad was like, all right, listen, you're not gonna sit here and gain a bunch of weight and be a fat kid, so you're going to do something. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do anything, and he forced me to do judo. I never wanted to do judo. I never liked judo, but he forced me to do it, and so I would purposely, intentionally lose every single match for the first year, and then I started liking it, and now we're here.
Yeah, but you also had a trainer. I want you to tell everybody about your trainer, who was a two-time Olympic trainer, and he's Japanese,
yep,
and he's passed, but he trained you.
Yep. Yaneska, he's from Cranford originally. He's a two-time Olympic coach, like you said. He used to train me when I was younger. He always believed in me, always said I would make it to this point. He wrote a letter to the New York Athletic Club, who's now one of my biggest sponsors.
Wow.
And in 2013, and he said, I promise he's going to get on the Olympic team. And if he doesn't, you can punish me for that. And he was right.
But you went to Japan to train. So you trained in Cranford.
Yep.
Japan. You went to Japan to train four times a week.
Yep.
For like 2 months, right?
Yeah. So what I did was, right out of high school, I was applying to San Jose State University. I didn't get in because the application was too late. So my trainer Yaneska and my dad were like, well, you're going to go to Japan for 4 months. And I was actually training 7 hours a day, 6 days a week, every day for 4 months. Toughest experience of my life. No Americans. I didn't speak any Japanese. And I just had to go over there and pretty much fight for my life every day.
But how is Japan? I mean, how's the culture? How do you deal with that?
It's amazing. When I first got there, I hated it because I didn't know how to speak Japanese. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know what to do. And I was getting beat up every day. But now, looking back on it, and after being there many times, I love Japan. They're respectable people. They're perfectionists.
The culture is clean. They're clean people. I love it.
Now, you didn't win the NCAA tournament champion once.
Yep.
Not twice, but three times.
Yep.
You're the three-time national championship. The
yep.
first time in 2000.
Well,
describe that experience.
That experience was an unforgettable one. It was in San Jose. I'm from San Jose. I graduated from San Jose State. So we were actually hosting the event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my family came out from New Jersey. So they were in the stands watching me. I had a whole group of people behind me. The stands were packed.
Wow.
And, I think my longest match might have been 35 seconds. I was on that day. So my longest match was 35 seconds. I beat everyone pretty fairly quickly.
But you had the hometown behind you, so that was exciting.
Exactly.
But then the next year, where was it? Because you won again in 2013.
Yeah, it was in Iowa the next year. I won out in Iowa. Same thing. It was, a tougher tournament that year. There were more guys, but you got to do what you got to do.
But now in 2014, you're the hunter. So everybody wants you because you're a two-time champ. How did you deal with being the favorite?
That was rougher because a lot of my matches were closer because now everyone's watching you on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
They know you. They're coming after you. People are training specifically for me. So it was a tough thing to deal with, but I pulled it out. I won my last match in overtime, so I pulled it out.
Now, you made bronze your first tournament after college?
Yes. Before college.
Mm-hmm.
The Senior Nationals.
Okay.
Oh, no, the first NCAA tournament after college.
Yeah.
That was the first year. Yeah, I took bronze. And
that was your pro now. How was that?
That was devastating. It was a guy had known that I was coming. I didn't expect it to be a tough tournament. I didn't know what I was getting into. I was like, I'm just going to run through this division. And in the semifinal, I lost to a guy actually from New Jersey.
Wow.
And, I should never have lost to that guy, but I did. And that opened my eyes and made me train harder. And I was like, I'm never losing at this tournament again.
See, I've watched you, and before we get into your journey to the Olympics, I call you the takedown artist. Because every time you're always taking people down, but there's a fundamental characteristic to that.
Yeah.
Explain to the audience who don't really know about judo about the fundamentals of how to do that.
It's tough. It took a lot of years, a lot of technique. When people watch on YouTube, they're like, oh, man, you must just be really physically strong.
Yeah.
And you're flipping people
all
over
the place. That's
what I thought. Yeah, that's what everyone thinks when they first see it. But it's there's a lot more that goes into it. I do about 500 just practice throws a day. Just after practice, I stay after, and I do about 500 throws.
It's like an NBA player taking jump shots.
Exactly.
It's the same thing.
Exactly.
Now you're headed to the Olympics.
Yeah.
You fought the top five guys.
Yes. Yep.
You lost all five of them.
Yeah.
But they were all close.
All close matches.
Who was the best one?
The best one was one that I never fought in a match. I fought him in a training camp in Paris. So same situation. But Baker from Japan. I think he's the top guy right now. He's the toughest guy. But like I said, anybody is beatable on any given day, especially in judo. Judo's a weird sport. It takes one moment.
Mm-hmm.
You slip for one moment, that's it. The match is over.
A lot of sports writers are saying because you're on a roll and you're on a hot streak, you're number 21, but you're the sleeper to either get bronze or silver or gold.
Yep.
So, I mean, at 21, you're putting in that extra work before you go. What are you doing extra before you go to Brazil?
A lot of mental work now. We just got done training in Europe for 3 weeks. I was overseas in Europe for 3 weeks training. Then we had a 2-week training camp in Boston. But right now it's a mental game. Physically, I'm the best I've ever been. I'm the best I probably will ever be. So it's mental. Mentally, I'm getting myself prepared to do that right now.
What adjustments, when you lost, what adjustments do you think you need to make in those losses?
It's more mental. I've been winning a bunch of matches and then had a mental lapse halfway through the match or something like that, lost focus for a second, match turned the other way, and then I couldn't get it back. I need to stay focused from the second I land in Rio to the second I step on the mat. Everything. I have to stay, as long as I can stay focused, which has happened, when I put things together, it's when I'm mentally focused.
Now, a lot of NFL teams and players watch tape.
Yep.
Do you do the same thing where you're watching a lot of tape?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, you fought the best guy. You're going to make the adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
You're a confident guy. You believe you're going to get a medal.
Yes, of course.
So what's the key for you now?
Key for me now is I'm in recovery for my body, so make sure my body's recovered, make sure I go over there physically as strong as possible, mentally in as good shape as possible, and just go out and do it. I got to believe in myself. It's all about belief, self-belief, like you just said.
See, I believe you're going to get gold, and just how do you feel? I know you think about this.
Yeah.
They're throwing the gold around you. They're playing a national anthem.
Yeah.
You're in the center.
Oh, yeah.
The whole world's watching.
Yeah.
That's
an incredible feeling. That's been my vision since I was 12 years old. That's been my vision. So in order to have that come true, that's a lifelong dream come true. That's what I work for. That's what I get up at 5 in the morning for every day. That's what I go to bed some nights in tears because I had a bad practice. Like, that's it is what it is.
And that's what I'm working for. Now, after the Olympics, you're going to get the huge media crush. Yeah. Everybody's going to come at you for stuff.
Yeah.
What's your plans after the Olympics?
After the Olympics, I'm taking 2 months off of judo just to heal my body and get ready, because I have to go for 4 more years for Tokyo 2020. So I'm going to take a little break, come back to New Jersey, spend time with family, deal with the media, and after that, we'll see what happens.
What about the other stuff? Not just the media, but the other things that happen, like the ladies.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any more Kardashians left, but people that might want to see, but I like him. Yeah. I saw him on the Wheaties box. How do you deal with that?
I got to stay away from that.
Okay.
I got to stay away from that. I won't, my dad, my grandpa, my whole family, actually, they've instilled pretty good values in me. So when it comes to that kind of stuff, I'm good at standing my ground and staying away.
Listen, your dad, when I was little, I decided I wanted to wrestle him. I said, he looks like a nice guy. And he flipped me over. It is the weirdest experience when you're upside down looking in the air and you lose control of your body.
Yep.
He was a nice guy. You were a nice guy, but you have a tenacity when you get in there. How do you turn the switch on and off?
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. Mm-hmm. When I see a mat, when I see a judo mat, I know it's time to go. So I put my headphones on, and my niceness turns to, hey, I have a job that I need to get done. I'm getting paid to do something. I have to do it.
See, because of your zone focus, I know you're going to win gold. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
That was Colton Brown, and he fought the Olympics, and he won, like I say, won his first fight, and then he lost the second. But he's going to win gold in Japan in 2020. He's ready. It's his time. He's going to work hard. He's a hard worker. He's a positive role model, and that's what we men of color need more of. And I mean, I was very upset to start the show about different things that bother me. I will say this, Carmelo Anthony, kudos to Carmelo Anthony. He's done charity work. Not only did he do charity work in Baltimore, he did an instructional video of how to talk to the police. And the kids listened. And if you have a generation that's respectful, I think that turns the tide a little bit. And he can be part of the reason the tide turns, because that's where it has to happen. And kudos for him. There's athletes that only want to talk about certain subjects, but Melo addressed it perfectly. Yeah, there's issues we might have with the cops, but let's deal with ourselves first. Let's take care of our problems. Let's do the right thing first. Then if there's problems outside of that, we can address that, and now we can be taken seriously. I got an issue with Colin Kaepernick, but like I said, he's getting cut because he's just not good enough. And maybe he wants to get cut. Maybe he doesn't want to play football no more, and he wants to be an activist or whatever. Hey, that's his choice. But he's not playing. His days are numbered. Saturday, I start my Saturday show where it's going to be a lot of college football. I cannot wait. It's going to be one of the best football weekends in the last 10 years, and I cannot wait to do that show. I'll have Matt Lowe on, who covers Auburn. He's going to talk SEC football. That's what I love, so I'm looking forward to that.